Welcome to the Vanderbilt University Center for Teaching podcast, part of the center's efforts to cultivate dialogue about university teaching and learning among faculty, students, and staff. I'm your host, Derek Bruff, an assistant director here at the Center for Teaching. This episode is the next to last episode in our first batch of podcast episodes. We'll take a little time off soon to focus our energy on the start of the semester. We'll be back with new episodes in the fall, however. In the meantime, we're interested in receiving some feedback on the podcast from our listeners. Please visit our blog, blogs.vanderbilt.edu/CFTpodcast, where you'll find a link to a short survey about the podcast. Please take a few minutes to complete this survey and provide us with some feedback. Your responses will be very helpful as we plan the next set of podcast episodes. This episode continues the format change of the last two episodes. It features audio recorded during a March 2008 Center for Teaching workshop titled Podcasting: What is it and why would you want to do it? We're splitting this workshop over two podcast episodes. This first episode features a discussion of the roles podcasting can play in and out of the classroom in the service of student learning. Why might you want to produce a podcast for your course? Why might you want students to produce podcasts as part of their coursework? How can you make the most out of either of these options? These and other teaching-related questions will be explored in this first episode. If you're curious about educational uses of podcasts in college and university teaching, I think you'll enjoy this episode. If you're already interested in podcasting, you'll also want to listen to our next episode, which will also include audio recorded from our March workshop, but will focus on some of the technical and logistical aspects of producing and using podcasts. The workshop featured remarks by Michael Risen, Graduate Teaching Fellow at the Center for Teaching, Jeff Johnston, an Assistant Director at the Center for Teaching and Lecturer in the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences, Melanie Moran, Assistant Director for Web Communications in the Public Affairs Office, and Brian Smokler, Manager of Instructional Systems for the Technology Support Center at Peabody College of Education and Human Development, and Video Technical Manager for the Public Affairs Office. Michael and Jeff took the lead on the teaching-related aspects of podcasting, so they're featured in this episode. Melanie and Brian took the lead on the technical aspects of podcasting, and you'll hear more from them in the next episode. Now here's Michael Risen from our March 2008 workshop.
The goals of this workshop are to introduce the methods of, sort of to address a lot of the concerns and thoughts that you guys are having, to introduce the methods of integrating podcast content into the course. In some ways, podcasting is the same thing as audio taping your class, but there are significant differences, and some of the advantages that it offers makes it overcomes a lot of the barriers that maybe instructors found in previously in some of using audio recordings. Two is to discuss the teaching and learning aspects of podcasting. What are the pedagogical considerations? When would it be appropriate to incorporate them? When would it not be appropriate? What is sort of some guidelines that we can use to decide how to incorporate those? And lastly, to provide a brief introduction to the process of the technical process of doing a podcast manual. And that's what Brian and Melanie will be talking about. First, to answer the question, or sort of to start the discussion with what is podcasting, that this definition is actually sort of, I sort of thought the place to get it would be Wikipedia, right? Because it's ever-changing, and you know the community is defining it. So this is a slight variation, emphasis added on the bolding, but it's a collection of digital media files, which is downloaded from the internet using subscription or syndication feeds for playback on portable devices or computers, stationary computers, PCs, whatever. The bolded parts there, I think, are important. The syndication aspect of it, and sort of in that sense, the subscription and the downloading, that I think what sets, one of the main aspects that sets a podcast apart from a regular AV or a regular audio file just on a computer somewhere is that rather than going and finding all the information, spending your time looking for those resources, you can set it up, you can subscribe, it comes to you. So if you're interested in a particular podcast from a professor in another, or an instructor in another country, or just a podcast somewhere on the planet, I mean, you don't have to go looking through the internet all the time, it can come to you. And, you know, the limits to that are unknown. I mean, how much can we set up in terms of teaching a class with, or in terms of our own consumption of podcasts? How far can we go in terms of incorporating those? I mean, there's no limit to what you can subscribe to. And that really sets apart podcasting from, say, just having audio files as part of your course instruction. And there's a lot of buzz around them. There have been a lot of university initiatives. Duke in 2003, 2004? A couple years ago, had all of their student, all their freshmen, I guess, get iPods, you know, and to sort of test what can we do with this, what can we do with podcasting, what can we do with audiovisual content in the courses. And there's been, you know, early research on it, how well did it work, what were the strengths, but it's very much an emerging technology and an emerging way of teaching. So some rough data is that 1 in 5 18 to 28-year-olds own an iPod or some sort of MP3 player, and that's period. That's just owners. So that's non-college, non-higher ed students, and general higher ed, and higher ed students. So if you look at higher ed, I think that number goes significantly higher. I think it's a much greater number of students owning them. But even in just the general population, for general distribution, it's still 1 in 5 people who are, as opposed to someone who grew up without this technology, are natives, right? Are literally growing up with it in terms of how they think. And research indicates that students overwhelmingly prefer to have the option of having podcasted content, of having audiovisual, or having audio content. There's just some debate there. There's not necessarily a whole lot of use sometimes. Some classes, some data indicates that only, say, 20% of students will actually use the podcasted lecture, for instance, or the supplemental podcasted material. But almost 100% of the students will want that option to be there in case they want to use it. And I think there are a lot of ways to interpret those findings that one can say, well, that means that students aren't using it, it's a technology that's not really going to lead anywhere. But I think the other end of that is that there's not like a formed way as how to use the technology as an instructional tool. And I think with the recency of it and the newness, it really changes the way that we conceive of a traditional lecture in class. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But I think that's probably, at least from my perspective, a little more what that data indicates, that there's not real conclusive evidence, practices about what an effective way to increase that critical mass of students using it, using that technology is. There's a vignette in an EDUCAUSE paper, an article about higher education that talks about students and imagining how a student uses a podcast and sort of to kind of contextualize it, the Vanderbilt version of it is that a student wakes up and let's say she lives over at the New Commons and she wakes up in the morning and fires up her computer and downloads a series of podcasts to her computer, to her iPod. So maybe it's a couple of classes, maybe a philosophy class and then maybe an ocean science class. They're two course-related podcasts. But then there's also, you know, the Pitchfork Media's, maybe it's on a Tuesday, so it's Pitchfork Media's New Music Tuesday podcast. And then there's the NPR World News in 10 Minutes. So as she's getting ready for class and getting ready in the morning, all of that content is quickly downloading to the iPod. And then as she's walking across campus, she's listening to the NPR News. And then she gets to the library and she listens to those courses, the course-related material. And that course-related material, she's taking notes on. Maybe the one for the philosophy class is like a student project where other students have summarized the reading for that class. And so that's going to form the basis of some of the discussion in the class. So she listens to it to sort of get their take and kind of know where they're going to be coming from with the presentation. So it can be, you know, then use that class time a little more effectively, that she and the other students know where these presenters are coming from. Now she's studying, taking some notes, she listens to the oceanography one, and she finds out some information about tidal moves, tidal cycles, right? And that allows the instructor to say, do you have any questions about, and she expects the professor to say, you've listened to the podcasted content, do you have any questions about, you know, tidal cycles? And if not, we're going to move on into an experiment. So they're not using that time, the professor is using that time a little bit differently in class. And she expects the professor to be using it that way, and so she has to listen to it and take notes. And then as she's walking to class, over in Calhoun, she listens to Pitchfork. Because if she hasn't listened to all the Pitchfork New Music Tuesday, she can listen to it later. The point of the vignette is that that's an increasing way that students are consuming information. And I think that offers some fundamental questions for us about how to use it, how does that change the way that we teach classes, and how does that change the way students learn? And that's clearly an emphasis on audio learning, but listening. And so what does that mean for the way that students learn and how we teach to them? And as I transition into sort of the uses, I think there are kind of three points that tie together some of those, that vignette and some of these, that on the one hand, like we said, it forces us to reconceive of what the lecture is, what the lecture time is used for, what the face time of getting together in class is. But also, it sort of raises those old objections, like, oh, she's listening to NPR and some pitchfork media thing. It's just music. It's just stuff. You know, it's just noise. There's no real substantive part to it. And it reminds me of when, you know, in the mid or early 90s, I guess, around there, when the idea of having a computer in a dorm room was, well, people are just going to screw around and play computer games on them. So, you know, it's better that we don't push to incorporate technology in the classroom. And, you know, I think this room is evident that that's not the case. And the way the students learn is that it proves that argument wrong. So though it would be, I think, sort of appealing maybe in ways to buy into those arguments, I think that some lessons that we've learned with incorporating other technologies is a cautionary tale that maybe that's not true. So I think that forces us to ask these questions about, well, what would using a podcast in a classroom look like? And I think that there are three primary uses. Using them so that students can access and review lectures, so that they can have access to supplemental materials, and so that they can generate projects. In terms of lectures, I think there are a few points about what that looks like. On the one hand, you know, there is, put all your lectures up. If you did the work on the front end and did all your lectures over the summer and put them up there, and students were assigned to listen to them before class, and you completely reconceive of the way that you teach, right? So that's the far end. Right. But there's a whole lot of middle ground in there in terms of recording them as they're delivered and then putting them up online so that students have the opportunity to review them, listen to them as they want, and use them as is appropriate for them. So if you're doing it that way, there's no real incentive to skip, right? I guess that the students could say, I'm just going to get the podcast online and I don't have to go to class, but that's part of that reconceiving of what the lecture time is, that there needs to be some added value. Excuse me, maybe a better way to say it is it allows you to have some added value as an instructor in that lecture time, that you can do more than just face-to-face time. Maybe that changes what classroom participation points are and whatnot. Also, I think that putting lectures online, particularly, maybe this isn't a huge consideration, but I think maybe in our everyday as we think about adopting them, but I think in a larger sense, allows for outreach by a university, that creating certain lectures to be available online for general non-student use. I know that some of the Ivy Leagues have done it, like Yale, I think, has an online professor series, and there's some really sort of interesting anecdotal stories about like long-haul truckers listening to these philosophical lectures from like high-end Yale professors, and they're learning sort of, you know, continental philosophy as they drive from Topeka to LA. And it allows, podcasting allows for that sort of consumption, which I think is a big benefit to a university as a PR or a sales or just a general piece of outreach. I think as an instructor, also, if you're thinking about podcasting your lectures, helps you to prepare for class in terms of what you're going to say, and you're putting it together if you're doing some lecture on the front end. Thinking about what you're going to record, then you're thinking about the class ahead of time. It's a good preparation move, but also I think it allows for good reflection by a professor, that if you are dedicated to recording what you're going to say, then listening to it yourself afterwards, I think, can be a very enlightening and somewhat uncomfortable exercise to improve your own teaching. There is a particular benefit also for foreign language in two senses. One, non-native English speakers to have the extra opportunity to listen to the lecture in a podcasted format as opposed to having to tape it themselves or, you know, having to only rely on their notes. Also, I think, though no one in here is from a foreign language department, I think that for foreign language departments it offers particular benefits in terms of practicing spoken language and hearing the professor or instructor speaking in addition to just the class time. Excuse me. I think there are lots of other benefits. Those are just some to highlight. In terms of supplemental materials, I think, again, a lot is offered here in terms of subject matter interviews, so sort of what you all are talking about, incorporating discussions from the cutting edge aspects of the field, cutting edge research, things like that, that can be incorporated into class discussion. Also, past lectures, past guest speakers, it no longer becomes a one-time event, but rather it becomes something that the instructor can keep, assign to students to listen to, and it can become part of the course content as opposed to a one-time thing. You can also just have someone else record it elsewhere. The speaker doesn't have to come all the way here. It can just be recorded in any number of formats and presented to the students via podcasting. I think that anecdotally, a lot of instructors, a lot of professors have brought in areas of interest into the class through supplemental materials. So linking up podcasts from other places, other universities, other research centers, and bringing those in as content as a way to enrich the discussion in the course. And I think sometimes, especially for undergraduate education, break down that wall a little faster of this is just academics. It contextualizes a lot of work that's done. And I think that has, that brings added value to it. Course housekeeping, if you forget to give a couple of examples or clarify a couple of points, then you're able to put that on a podcast and let people know, also to preview announcements, you know, and sort of course procedural stuff that would take up 5-10 minutes at the beginning of class. You have the podcast to do that. And lastly, student projects that are, I think with podcasting, we get the same benefit of a lot of collaborative work. It can be a one-person assignment, but due to sort of the technical understanding, putting together the project, it lends itself well to collaboration among students. It has a few net benefits along that line, like collaboration itself as a benefit, as learning itself becomes more collaborative, and data indicates that working together and being the teacher yourself is a great way to learn. That's one clear benefit. Also, it brings easy distribution to the class. Certainly at some point, it's easy to have a group come in and present something and everyone sees it, but if it can be podcasted, that syndication and distribution makes it very easy to reach the entire class. And there's this consideration of the depth of publication and the extent of it, that the student's project can be distributed not just to the people in the immediate classroom, but globally. And I think that, at least for me, but I would imagine for most people, that if you're putting something together for the globe, that's going to strike you as a little more maybe weighty. And if it's in a blog format or there's, you know, the ability to put people to respond, then there's some weight on your presentation. And I think that, again, breaks down maybe some of that wall of this is academics versus applied knowledge. They begin to think about and conceptualize that those projects and that work in more of a global sense, certainly outside of these of just academics. Excuse me. So in terms of what student projects can look like, as mentioned before, summarizing readings before class, in a philosophy class, perfect chance to summarize, you know, the categorical imperative and what does commonly mean here, and that's something that the professor can bring to class as a discussion point since everyone's already listened to the presentation. It can be more of a discussion as opposed to a lecture format. Students bringing, not just instructors bringing supplemental materials, but students bringing supplemental materials to class. So students going out and finding podcasts and blogs and whatnot that they think are interesting, inform the class, relate to class content material, they can talk about those on the podcast, bring in the podcast itself. So the scope of what, I mean, and we could talk for a long time about what those projects would look like. My point is that by podcasting and by syndicating these audio files, the nature of what that student work is can really change and become much more dynamic and can facilitate relationships among students in the class that really previously weren't there.
Here's just a few of the things that I was thinking about. We've already talked about a lot of these. So enable students to explore the material in new ways. Again, blending the material that you're talking about in class versus the stuff that you're talking about. I mean, if you want to, we talked a lot about supplementing the material or supplementing the course material. And so, how do you perhaps the aspects that you're podcasting, whether it's solving some additional problems that came up, the student emailed you a question, so you could post the podcast, or let's say that you remember that, oh, I didn't have time in class to go over these three problems, but these would be really helpful in giving additional ways of, additional examples of these types of problems that are going to be on the exam next week. So there's, again, just new ways to explore course materials. Again, students can access this stuff 24/7. If they're studying for the final or the midterm, at 3 a.m. the night before, they can listen to the lecture again then, if that's the time that suits them. Expands the reach of the classroom. We've talked about making this stuff available. You can make the podcasts available just to class, or you can make them available to the whole world via the internet. So, opening up that audience to the students, whether it's to your own instructional materials, or whether it's to the student-created podcasts, and so giving them the additional audience. And also gives students a chance to learn new technical skills, and this is primarily related to if they're creating their own podcasts. But so, as we'll see in a few minutes, there's not a lot of, you can do podcasts pretty simply, or you can get pretty complicated and do very, very well-polished, professional-type things. And so for students, they can learn the new technical skills.
Jeff, can I make one point about that?
Absolutely.
And it's more about expanding the reach of the classroom, I think. I've seen some research that indicates, this is the work of Richard Light at Harvard, and he interviewed a whole bunch of students and asked them about different things. And one of the results that he found was that some students, when they know they're going to be, in the question he asked, or the context he was thinking of, was students writing to other students, that if a student has to write an essay and they submit it to the professor or the instructor, sometimes they'll kind of let things slide a little bit because they know there's an expert reading their paper, and so they may not be as kind of polished or communicate as clearly as they would. But when they know they're writing to their peers, somehow that actually raises the bar, which is kind of surprising because you would think writing to your professor, this is the person that's going to be grading you. But writing to your peers actually helped them take it more seriously. They wanted to look good in front of their peers. They knew they had to explain things thoroughly because they have, an audience of novices. And so I can imagine that same effect would happen with students producing podcasts, producing audio material, either for their peers or for the outside world. I think it would raise the bar and encourage them to do a better job, take it more seriously, communicate more clearly.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And that actually correlates well with what I've heard from faculty who have asked students to blog as opposed to discussion forums. Sometimes discussion forums, it can be hard to get students to really engage in them. But blogs, they're available and read by a much larger audience. And so students tend to blog more than they write in discussion forums is what I've heard.
I would just kind of echo that one. Anecdotal information I've heard is that using some of these tools will bring out some students who might not want to participate in the classroom. But then when they're maybe a little bit more private or a little shy, they get really engaged in this way. And so students that you might not have heard from before, you're hearing
them. Giving them a voice. So these are just steps, and I don't want to spend my time's almost gone, so I just want to actually just point these out. This is from a resource, the Teaching and Learning with Podcasting from the University of Madison talked about some recommended steps for creating your first podcast, sort of keeping in mind the teaching and learning goals. So what they talk about is the steps. So select the appropriate content. They talk about how just simply recording a lecture is maybe not the most engaging thing. Or if you do maybe snippets of the lecture, so you want to keep it to 10 minutes, 15 minutes, but you putting a whole 50-minute lecture would probably you'd probably have some dedicated students who would go through it, but you might not reach as broad of an audience as you want. And think about what's something that's particularly engaging in an audio format. You don't want to go through a lot of very specific, detailed problem solving. Just keep in mind that students will often be listening to this while they're working out at the gym or while they're walking to class. And so just think about the context of how they will be accessing this information. Determine your instructional goal. Now, it seems to me, actually, if I were writing this, I think I would have switched one and two here. I think I would. So why am I incorporating podcasting? How does it fit with my teaching and learning goals for my course or the outreach, whatever I'm doing? So then after that, then I think about, okay, so if this is my goal, what's the content that best helps me fit my goal? Design your content. Think about, okay, so how am I going to create an effective, engaging story here? Produce the podcast and then incorporate the podcast in the course. So again, on this link, it goes into a little bit more detail about each of these steps. These student tips is actually from the 51-page ELI Discovery Tool that I mentioned. They had interviewed a lot of students in terms of students. If you could talk to faculty members, what would you recommend about podcasting? What are the things that you would tell faculty to do? And these are the seven things. One, don't assume a technical competence. And we all talk about the digital natives and have all students know about podcasting. Don't assume that. And make clear instruction, provide clear instructions for students about how to access the podcasts. And so, encourage them, the students perhaps that do know, to work with the students that don't to get books so that everyone learns what they need to learn to access the podcasts. Keep it simple. Don't try to do anything too complex. Again, this I think ties into some of the points I was making in the last slide. Quality counts. Think about the sound quality. Students in this piece were talking a lot about how they could tell how much effort a faculty member had put into a podcast. And so if the sound quality was bad, if they had a hard time hearing, then they were less likely to go back and listen to the podcast in the future. So think about the sound quality. Make it relevant to the course material. I mean, again, students aren't going to be accessing it if it's not related and integrated to the course. Think about ways of offering something more. We've talked about the supplemental nature that these podcasts can be. So again, if you record the lectures, you might get some students listening and paying attention, and there are some benefits in that. But if you can think about how this can flip what it is that you're doing in class versus what are the things that you're doing outside of class specifically. Like the reading, encourage students to do the reading before coming to class. If they also are listening to the podcasts, then you've got to change the nature of the conversations, change the way that you structure your course. These last two really have to do with student-centered podcasts or student projects. So if you're asking students to create podcasts in collaborative groups like Mike was talking about, don't put limits on what they can do or have. I mean, think about, again, what are your teaching and learning goals for your course and come up with a creative assignment that matches that, but then don't put particular requirements on that limit their imagination. Again, these are recommendations from students. And encourage them to explore, to use the media to explore the content in different ways.
Jeff, can I chip in one more thing here?
Absolutely.
Now that I've been working with Mike to produce the Center for Teaching podcast, and we've got a few episodes, and I figured out we kind of learn kind of what's involved and what it takes and how easy it is to get good content. I've been kind of surprised that now that it's kind of on my mind, I'm always thinking of, oh, we could interview that person, or, oh, we could record that thing over there. And it's just this idea of exploration and imagination. It's been really neat to see how, now that I'm in it and I've done a few of these, I start to get lots of ideas that just come to me of things that we could be doing with this medium. So it's pretty exciting. And I can imagine students kind of doing that as well. Once they've done a couple, that they could really start to get creative with it.
You've just heard audio recorded at our March 2008 workshop titled Podcasting. What is it and why would you want to do it? I would like to thank the presenters, Michael Risen, Jeff Johnston, Melanie Moran, and Brian Smokler, for their presentations at the workshop and for permitting us to include them in our podcast. If you have any comments or questions about this episode, please visit our blog, located at blogs.vanderbilt.edu/CFTpodcast, and let us know your thoughts. We're interested in hearing what you have to say about possible uses of podcasting in your teaching. You'll also find in our blog links to the PowerPoint presentation used in the workshop, as well as links to the handouts referenced during the discussion and some other relevant resources. Vanderbilt instructors interested in discussing podcasting or any other aspect of their teaching are invited to call the Center for Teaching at 615-322-7290 to arrange a meeting with a CFT teaching consultant. We're glad to help you reflect on and explore the various choices you make as a teacher and to connect you with resources you'll find useful as you design, implement, and assess learning experiences for your students. I've been your host, Derek Brough. Please don't forget to take a few minutes to provide us with some feedback on our podcast series. You'll find a short survey on our blog. Thanks for listening.